dealing with the millennium and creation in the millennium. And our last two lessons will deal with the Edenic condition upon the earth that we have been discussing, where the desert blossoms as the rose, fertility of the earth, nothing shall hurt nor destroy all my holy mountain, all the other beautiful statements of an Edenic paradise. And as we say, certainly this is an Edenic paradise envisioned here. The garden of the Lord will be restored over the earth. Or as Peter calls it, the restitution of all things spoken by the mouth of all of his holy prophets since the world began. In other words, the Edenic paradise that is upon the earth before man fell. And we will see why that Edenic condition was there and how it will be again. We must consider a little bit of what we were considering more in detail in cosmology next year, the last great doctrine of the 10 great cardinal doctrines of the faith with which we deal, leaving out eschatology or future things because we study prophecy in the other courses about mine, and we would not want to overlap. But in cosmology, we shall be studying creation again. So that is the doctrine of cosmology, the doctrine of creation. And in it we deal with divine providence. And one of our prime considerations is the extent of cosmology. And we'll deal with the three heavens and the three hells and earth in between, or the sevenfold extent of all that God has made. Everything that God has made is included in these seven divisions, three heavens, three hells, and earth in between. And in it, we will deal with the canopied earth. We will also deal with the theory, the gap theory that's so thoroughly condemned, it seems today, by Whitcomb and Morris in their book on the flood, and many others. And I understand that even here, some are teaching that the gap theory is not true. But I'll give you the other side of the fence. I believe in the gap theory. I am disappointed, however, in two or three books that I have in my library. I have Whitcomb and Morris. I also have a special thesis put out by Morris on against the gap theory and trying to establish his 6,000-year age of the earth theory. I am disappointed also in a book that's being used in our church in Newport Richey, practically calling everybody a liar that doesn't believe in the 6,000-year history and making the Bible out a liar. Be careful not to go to the extreme to say that your interpretation of the Bible is as accurate as the Bible, is as infallible as the Bible, and that if anybody rejects your theory, they're liars. I've heard many a little pipsqueak preacher get up and make this statement, and he had some far-fetched interpretation of some portion of Scripture and says, now this is the Bible, and you're arguing with God when you disagree with me. Well, you're not. You're arguing with his interpretation of that verse. It may not apply to what he says at all. Be careful. Don't claim the same infallibility for your teachings that the Bible has. It is true that the closer you come to what the Bible teaches, the closer the truth you'll have. But let me say it again, we have one infallible book, but no infallible teachers today, or preachers, none at all. I don't claim for my teachings any infallibility at all. Even though I believe they're true, I wouldn't be teaching them. I'd be a hypocrite if I did. And the Lord knows my heart, I'm not a hypocrite. I believe what I teach is so. I believe it's firm, of course. Firmly and thoroughly. I'll use both words. I tried to use them all at one time. There is a lot of room for difference of opinion. I have read just about everything that the 6,000-year-old Earth theory has advanced. Oh, by the way, one more thing. I don't admire at all what Whitcomb and Morris says, or Morris says in several of his works. He equates the gap theory of creation with evolution, an accommodation of evolution. It is not so. I have never yet known a real teacher of the gap theory, that the gap is between the first verse and the second verse of Genesis. I have never known one to be an evolutionist who believes that. I don't know where he gets it. Now, the geological age theory, that the 6 days are ages, is the evolutionary theory. The new evangelicals hold to it, and most theistic evolutionists hold to it. But the gap theory itself, as taught by Scofield in the Scofield Bible, and it was universally believed until the new science research crowd came along. In fact, I never heard any real fundamentalist in my youth who did not believe in the gap theory in one way or another. But never get the idea that because a person believes that God created the earth perfect in Genesis 1:1, and then when Lucifer fell, it fell with him, and became without form and void, translating 1:2 of Genesis, and the earth became without form. Now they try to say the Hebrew won't bear this out, but at least 36 times in the Old Testament, the verb to be is translated became. Not was originally this way. Since we won't have a chance to return to this until we come to cosmology as far as defending the gap theory, I have read all that they have written that I can find. I have also been a subscriber to the Science Research Society's newsletter for, I guess, 20 years. No, not quite that long. I don't think they've been in existence that long, but right after they came into existence, I started subscribing to it. I enjoy it. I have gotten a lot of material from it. But they defend the 6,000-year age theory. And of course, they've had to invent, as we said in the former class, they've had to invent an instantaneous creation of geological ages, since the geological ages are everywhere evidence in the earth. And I said, you remember in the last class, God could have created this if he'd wanted to, as he created Adam and Eve, adults with a complete memory of a life they never lived. He could do this. It's not his ability. But I say, why raise the difficulty when I believe sincerely that the Bible teaches the gap theory? It teaches it. Now, there's only one text that I'm going to use now, but I'll give you a number of texts. And as I deal with the canopied earth back there to show what it's going to be like in the millennium, since it's the restitution of all things, God's going to restore a canopy to earth used to have. Why the canopy was there? And where it was there? Let me give you one text. Let's see if I can find the scriptural reference in particular that I want to give. I might have to wait and come to it later. It's in Isaiah. I think it's 45, if I remember right. I've got so many notes here all scattered around because I want to give a resume. Anyhow, Isaiah used the very word used in Genesis. And I mentioned this before, tohu, without form. And the earth, the authorized version says, was without form. But Isaiah said he didn't create it that way. What? 45:18. Where Isaiah says he created it not tohu. Now there's some other texts that we'll use when we come to it next year in cosmology. But there's no contradiction. And by the way, there's an explanation of so many other things that the 6,000-year people have no explanation for at all. Where, when, how, why, what did Lucifer fall? And he's already fallen when Adam came. He's already here, a fallen creature, ruler of this world. Where? If it wasn't in the prior creation, right here on earth. I don't know, it might say that he fell from heaven, but it says he walked up and down in the paradise of God, and every precious stone was his covering. Where do the demons come from? And I find every one of these people are vague on demons. I have Whitcomb's book also on demonology, or Unger's rather, on demonology, and he believes in the 6,000-year-age earth. And I'm very disappointed in his treatment of where demons came from. Now, he gives all the theories that demons are a form of fallen angels. They're not. And we'll deal with this in angelology next year, and demonology. Demons are not angelical at all. And the simple proof of this is they seek embodiment, and angels never do. But angels never had a body. Why should an angel seek to be embodied in a human form to express himself? And why should he roam up and down the earth being at unease when he's cast out of a man? And any time that he's outside of a body, he's at unrest. But he never used to have a body. In other words, demons have souls because they used to have a body. Where and when? Since they're confined to the earth. They are confined to the earth. Either the heart of it, some of them, or on the earth as they roam up and down the earth. Seeking embodiment. Why? We'll give this in demonology. I believe it's because there are three Adamic order of creatures that lived upon this earth under Lucifer and fell when he fell, irrevocably, and are confined to the earth until the judgment day. When did the demons fall here on earth? If the earth is only 6,000 years old, it couldn't have been since Adam. One more thing before we leave it, just a minute. One more thing. When did the great ferocious carnivore roam the earth? If it wasn't before Adam. They couldn't have done it from Adam to the flood, which is quite the recent time. Since they weren't carnivorous before the flood, they ate herbs. Like the other animals. No flesh eating at all before the flood. Not any. You'll see this. It had to be before Adam. Well, way back there. When great carnivore roamed the earth, and it was brute force and brutality, slaying, it had to be since the flood. In fact, since the flood, you could not have had the great tiger, saber-toothed tiger, roaming Siberia. Or the islands in the Bering Sea that are covered with fossilized bones of great herb-eating dinosaurs. Marmots. Hippopotami. All great creatures that had to have prodigious amount of vegetation. Now, we'll deal with this in cosmology more thoroughly to show that from pole to pole, according to every geologist, this earth was a garden of the Lord. And only herbivorous at first. Until something happened that made animals carnivorous. Animals that haven't lived on this earth since past 6,000 years ago. Unless God created the bones in the earth. And this is what they're trying to prove. These 6,000-year-old people are making difficulties where none exist. I said, God could do it. God could make these islands in the Bering Sea that are made up of thousands of feet of nothing but bones. Great animals that had to have prodigious amount of vegetation. For instance, the biggest dinosaur that ever lived was over 80 feet long. And had to eat over 2,000 pounds of vegetation every day to keep going. It would starve to death even in the heart of Africa. It couldn't get that much vegetation. It had to have these great ferns and stuff that was upon the earth in this original creation. Yes? We'll see it because the earth was verdant from pole to pole as a paradise of the Lord. I'll show you in the overthrow of the flood in particular, and in the original creation too. The I will quote from, in cosmology, I'll quote from a great number of sources. Some of the oldest geologists show the cataclysmic overthrow, and especially at the time of the flood in these latest creatures. The mammoth is not pre-Adamic. Neither are the hippopotamus, nor the great horses that roamed the earth. Large horses, a lot larger than we have now. One could read, of course, with a grain of salt as far as his conclusions are concerned, because he's an atheist, but Villiskowski's two books. World in Collision, or Earth in Upheaval. He proves catastrophism, by the way, without any doubt. And Wickham and Morris all believe in catastrophism, but only believe in one, the flood. I believe that the Earth has had at least two great cataclysms and two great canopies. Now, this is what I'm trying to prove. In the past, and has two in the future. Now, that's prophecy. That belongs to our past today and at first. It has had two canopies in the past. It's going to have two in the future. One at the beginning of the millennium, and the other at the beginning of eternity, in the new heavens and the new earth. And these canopies are going to bring about an Edenic paradise, yes? Well, they were a race. I used to think they were not a race, but as in next year in angelology, I will try to prove that the demons were, they had the power of procreation. And here's why the demons tempt humans today to sexual impurity. And I believe they are the instigators of most of it, along with human lust, too. Well, only in God's foreknowledge. I do not put it under that. Though there are a lot of other texts that I will use next year to show why God calls them unclean spirits and why they prey upon human lust. It is to satisfy their own lust. Since a disembodied creature with soulish lust cannot satisfy those soulish lusts. And by the way, this would be one of the greatest torments in hell. Is unsatisfied human lust. This is why ours have been crucified and will be done away with completely at the rapture, yes? They have found, for instance, with the mammoths in particular, even human artifacts. Along with them. And next year I will draw a lot of conclusions, and I'll give a lot of quotations from a great number of scientists, even those who have no explanation. And by the way, I have tabulated some six explanations that they have for it, which are far-fetched. And maybe I'll have time in the next class at least to give their six conclusions. But they do not follow the biblical teaching, I believe, of the canopy earth. In prophecy, as we come to it, and we want to give first the idea of what the earth was like, and this is the restitution in the future. In the recanopying, all of those Edenic conditions that were present in the Garden of Eden, and even after they were kicked out of the garden, until the flood came and changed everything. The canopy was removed, it was precipitated to the earth, the ocean came up 600 to 1,000 feet. Apparently, every geologist believes this, and I'll give you some proofs of it, to show you that there's going to be a lot more Earth's surface after God removes the ice caps off from the North and South Pole, which covers about one-tenth of the Earth's surface. And then he's going to remove the oceans down to the continental shelf, which will almost double the Earth's surface. God's going to make a lot more room, and then he's going to lower the mountains and raise the marshes, and make the deserts to blossom. Every mountain tremendous shall be moved out of its place in that last great earthquake at the revelation of Jesus Christ. We shall see three methods God's going to use to recanopy the earth. But let us hurry on and see first, and we probably won't get much further than this today, that there was a canopy. I'm glad to see Whitson and Morris has accepted this at last. And in their book on the deluge, the Noah's flood, they teach the canopied earth back there. There's no other way to explain the condition of the earth at that time, as there is no way to explain the Edenic condition in the millennium, except the recanopying. In your notes, we have some, and I want to give you a little out of your notes. Genesis indicates that before the flood, the earth had a universal climate, no wind, no rain, no seasons as far as growing seasons, no rainbow, since there were no clouds in the sky. There couldn't be, not with a canopy, earth. No clouds, no rainbow. Here's why there was no rainbow till after the flood. Couldn't be. There was no light as we know light, day and night. It is interesting to note that God doesn't mention sunshine till after the fall. Really, after the flood. He had the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. Before the sun was created, before the sun shone through completely through the water that was above the firmament. Canopy. There was no burning heat of day. And there was no darkness of night. We'll see this in Zechariah 14 again. The canopy would diffuse the sun's rays around the earth so that there would be no blazing actinic rays in the daytime, and there'd be no darkness at night. But there would be light at night, but a softer light to rule the night as it was before the flood. God said distinctly in Genesis 2, 5, and 6, there was no rain, but a mist. And the word mist is an inaccurate translation. It carries the idea of copious amounts of water came up out of the earth and watered the earth. But it acted a whole lot like dew. But there wouldn't be any dew, not in that condition before the flood. We don't read of any wind until 8:1. There's no seasons as we know them now because they were first mentioned in 8:22. No clouds for 9:14 says, I will bring a cloud. No carnivorous animals, for we read they ate herbs in Genesis 1:30. I have given every green herb for meat. Here's why the lion should eat straw like the ox. No fermentation of the grape juice. You notice God doesn't blame Noah for getting drunk. He had planted grapes and made grape juice all of his life and drunk it all of his life, and he never got drunk on it till after the flood. The actinic rays is what fermented the grape juice and made it alcohol, yes? No, but there is an indication that it will be probably either in the stratosphere or the ionosphere. It has to be above the atmosphere, which is about 1,000 to 1,500 feet, miles altogether. It has to be beyond that. And I will show you probably the nature of it, either in this class or in cosmology class. I believe there are indications of what it will be, both from science and from the Word of God. It's because the earth had a lot less water than it has now. All science is in agreement that the oceans at one time came up at least 600 feet to 1,000 feet. I'll give you many indications in our cosmology class. One of them is that they have found ocean beaches. 1,000 feet down off the Canary Islands, with human artifacts and even buildings that were down there. I really believe the lost continent of Atlantis is not just a fable or mythology. I believe it's the truth. There was a continent that was inundated at the flood. Now we'll see that when the canopy was broken up at the flood, and we're only indicating this now since it's a prophecy class and not a historical part. We emphasize that in the other class. There is an indication that two things happened to cause the canopy or the water to come up on the earth. One was a breaking up of the belts of heaven, or the canopy, precipitating this water that was above the firmament to the earth. And a raising of the earth of the ocean floor. The fountains of the great deep were broken up. This inundated the whole earth, the highest mountain on it. And then there will be even a local flood. It won't fill the scriptures, nor any of the other conditions necessary for drowning the inhabitants, not just in a little local valley over there. The very longevity before the flood, and we'll go into this in great detail later, it wasn't anything for a man to live to be over 900 years. Why? Right after the flood, life was completely shortened. 120, 140 was very old, until finally Moses said 3, 4, and 10, with very little over that, and many, many under that. We will show that the actinic rays of the sun that ferments, decays, and ages. By the way, here's why God allowed man to eat meat after the flood. You need meat. You've got to have the amino acids. The body craves them, has to have them. You can't. There's no way to rebuild the living cells of the body except with amino acids. No other way. And the richest source is the meat. Man didn't need meat before the flood, because the actinic rays of the sun were all filtered out by the water crystals. I believe this is the form of the canopy. You'll see some of these water crystals on some nights when it's going to rain the next day, if there's a ring around the moon. The ring around the moon is caused by ice crystals in the atmosphere. That's small frozen crystals of water. I believe sincerely, and of course they would be ice crystals, they wouldn't be liquid, not out there at least 1,500 miles out, where the temperature gets down around 460 degrees below zero, when everything does crazy things at that temperature. Science can make artificially this temperature now, and steel will crack and break up and sometimes disintegrate at this temperature, some forms of steel. The water up there would be in ice crystals. It would allow the rays to come through, but would refract them in such a way that actinic rays would be filtered out, and the longevity of man upon the earth would be established. And this is why they live to be over 1,000 in the millennial reign of the Lord Jesus. Now, there are lots of proofs of this canopy back there. We have amassed a number of them from our various readings in geology, and of course we've gathered together everything in the Bible we can find on the subject. There was an article in the Geographic magazine, and of course they never know how to explain anything because they're evolutionists. They're always talking about our monkey ancestors. But this article was written by a rear admiral who during the geophysics year spent the whole time at the South Pole in Antarctica. And I cut out quite a few things from the article. There are great ferns frozen in the ice in the South Pole. There are sequoia trees, conifers, various conifers that only grow in tropical climates. They're at the North Pole also. Within 500 miles, for instance, of the North Pole in Siberia, they have found giant mammoths frozen in the ice with undigested herbs, tropical herbs, in their stomachs. Did you know that we get most of our ivory? If you have an old piano with genuine ivory keys, did you know you're tickling old mammoth tusks that roamed the earth before Adam? Strange, isn't it? Did you know that most of the ivory of the world doesn't come from Africa, it comes from Siberia? And the islands in the Bering Sea are made up almost entirely of bones and ivory from these great creatures? I'll give you some statistics on that next year. My subject's not here to do it. I'm just beating all around the bush in this class to show you that there was a canopy and there's going to be another one. This is the way God's going to do it. Now, he could do it without it, I know, but have you ever noticed that God used a natural means to do most things? It's his method. It's one of the another reason why I do not believe in the instantaneous archaeological ages being created by God. I believe this earth is not 6,000 years old. I think it's millions and billions of years old. And I don't find any contradiction between that and the Bible. Not a word of it. I will enlarge upon that later, but at the flood, the canopy was broken. There was a continual occurrence of the water covering the whole earth. And then it took a continuous gathering of the water into one place. Well, by the way, there was one more text that I wanted to use. And of course, I don't know how in the world anybody explains this text without having a canopy, where it says, and God divided the water which was above the firmament from the water which was below the firmament. Now, a lot of people seem to think that was only the clouds up there, or the atmosphere, but the atmosphere is full of water itself. The water which was above the firmament had to be above the expanse, the clear expanse which was above the earth. And then he divided the waters which were under the expanse from the land. That's a lot of dry land appears. When God broke up the canopy, as Satan gives it, the belts of the heaven were broken up, and the fountains of the great deep. And we'll go into the Hebrew word there for belts and fountains. It carries the idea of a cataclysmic upheaval in nature that precipitated to the earth all that water. I have tried my best to find in some book how they explain why the ice at the South Pole and the ice at the North Pole is fresh water and not salt water. Now, there are at least six theories. I'm not going into them, but science has tried its best to explain all these things. They said the shifting of the poles. At one time, in other words, the North Pole is where the equator was, and so on. But that won't explain anything, as you'll see in another class. Others have had the continent shifting. That won't explain anything either. Others have had it as rising of the coast and lowering of the coast. That doesn't explain anything either. I can't find one single scientific explanation why there's so much fresh water, especially at the South Pole. Not more than the North Pole. The North Pole's that planet. But did you know there's over 6 million cubic miles of ice at the South Pole? 6 million cubic miles. Cubic. Did you know most of the ice pack at the South Pole is anywhere from 1 mile to 3 miles thick? With these tropical things in it. And it's drinkable. All they have to do is melt it. They can drink it. Not salty. Fresh. This same article in the Geographic magazine said if all the ice at the South Pole alone were melted, the ocean would come up about 600 feet. And that is now. Where did all this water come from? It came from the breaking up of the canopy. And when God took the canopy away from the lowering of the ocean's surface by 600 to 1,000 feet, Genesis 7:11, the fountain of the great deep was broken up and the windows of the heavens opened. And we'll show from the Apostle Peter some more about that. The heavens and the earth involved in that flood. That wasn't an ordinary flood. It wasn't just a rainstorm. It wasn't just the rain. The Bible not only mentions the belts of the heaven broken, but it also mentions the fountains of the great deep broken up. Water not only came from above, it came from below. To inundate the whole earth. Yes? Not water. I do believe in the molten mass in the heart of the earth theory, by the way. The volcanoes, I think, prove this beyond a shadow of a doubt. But the earth also has a substrata of water. And if God broke up the fountains of the great deep, the abysmal depth of the ocean, if he raised the ocean floor, it would cause quite a bit more water to flood over the land. And next year in cosmology, we'll also be dealing with the subject that there is hardly a part of the earth that hasn't been covered with ice. Now, they try to put it the ice age way back there 100 million years ago, but that ice age had to be within the memory of man almost for several reasons. The myths that cover the earth, traditions that cover the earth, but also these creatures that have lived within the area of man, era of man, frozen in the ice caps. It was a miraculous thing. Notice Genesis 6:13 and 17. God said, I do bring a flood. Behold, I will destroy all flesh with the earth. Now, the word destroy there doesn't carry the idea of annihilation. It carries the idea of annulling or bringing into a state of complete disorganization. This cataclysm. It took place at the flood, it took place at the original creation when the earth became without form and void. There is no doubt at all that the earth arose between 600 and 1,000 feet. That's without the ice caps melting. They're still there. In other words, when God destroyed the canopy, much of the water that was at the South Pole and the North Pole stayed there. Didn't melt. Because the canopy had been removed. And those awful climates still exist now at the poles. It wasn't there before the flood. Professor Dana estimates, for instance, that Connecticut was covered by an ice cap of over 8,000 feet at one time. Connecticut. This must have been at the flood. It has to be. So, to the air, the Frenchman, the eternal frost which descended and possessed the region of the earth, which these animals inhabited, destroyed them and encased them at the same time. And he says in his book, as at one winter's night. Job 38:30 says, the waters hid as it were a stone, or rather hand gives it congealed as it were a stone, and the face of the deep is frozen. This had to be at the breaking up the canopy. In our next lesson, we will deal with several texts that deals with the millennium to show you that this is what God's going to do in the next time when Christ comes back to earth. And we'll see the three methods that he should use, natural methods, from the scriptures. Then we'll deal with the Adamic condition again and how it can only be possible with a renewed canopy. And God mentions the canopy by name in Isaiah. But we'll reserve it for that class. See if there's anything else we'd like to give before we leave off on this one. We want to start with the recanopy there. We'll deal with Isaiah 24:19-20. We'll deal with Isaiah, the 4th chapter, 5 and 6, Zechariah again, and then with several texts dealing with how he's going to do it. We want to deal primarily with 2 Peter 3:10-14, the prophecy of the coming of our Lord, strange prophecy, the elements not with a fervent heat, the heavens roll together as a scroll, the stars removed out of their places. Tremendous cataclysmic transformation at the revelation of Christ to issue in his millennial reign. Remember, one of the great results of his coming, or signs of his coming, not signs, but effects of his coming, will be the greatest earthquake the world has ever seen. An earthquake, we shall see, is a misnomer, as we saw in Revelation last year. It's a heaven quake too. He says, once more, I will shake both the heavens and the earth. Violent motion. We'll see this is what Peter mentions. He has in mind in that text in 2 Peter. Violent motion. This shaking is going to shake the whole shebang. Everything. And it's going to change the whole topography of the earth and the heavens. Over the earth. And it's going to recanopy the earth. One of the forces that God will use. I'll name the three forces. The earthquake, or the shaking, and speeding up the earth on its axis by a third. And then the elements. Great heat, nothing with a fervent heat. All of these things will be used by God to make over this whole earth and the immediate heaven above us for the millennial reign of Jesus Christ. Don't confuse this with the new heavens and the new earth, where he says, behold, I make all things new. That's after the millennium. But he's got to do a lot of changing around before the millennium to remove the curse. And to restore everything to the Adamic paradise for the 1,000-year reign of Christ. Yes? No. This is Even when Christ said, "Behold, I beheld Lucifer as lightning fall from heaven," that takes place in the middle of the tribulation period. That's when the angel says, "Woe be to the inhabitants of the earth, for Satan has come down and you having great wrath, for you know this time is short." There was a cataclysmic reaction when Lucifer fell, and that was when the original canopy was broken up, if we're right about the gap theory. And we'll try to prove it. I'm more convinced than I ever was after reading everything that they've been able to write about a 6,000-year earth. I still believe in the gap theory. And that Lucifer was the ruler of this world who had subjects under him, both angels and demons. And it is interesting to note that all mythology not only believed in bad demons, but good demons. They were semi-gods who were good and bad. I don't believe that God ever made anything bad, do you? So the demons must have been good when he made them. They became bad when Lucifer fell. Not only did Lucifer fall and the third part of the stars of heaven with him, but all the demons on earth fell too. And they're still here